Hello, welcome back to the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny, the only NFL podcast with six combined legs and one combined brain between the two hosts. I am recording this from sunny but cold Bristol, Connecticut. It's beautiful. Joined by my close personal friend, Matthew Berry. You know him as the host of the Fantasy Focus Football Podcast and the Fantasy Show on ESPN Plus. He's a terrific listen in all formats and an excellent writer, by the way.
Well, thank you.
I love your writing.
That, by the way, that's the biggest compliment. That means a lot because I'm a huge Mina Kimes, the writer fan. Obviously, I like you a lot personally, but just I'm a big Mina Kimes, the writer fan. So the fact that you like my writing is a huge compliment. Thank you.
And one of the nicest people at ESPN. My first radio gig here was doing fantasy football, little known fact.
True.
Fantasy show on Sundays, and Matthew was very helpful and kind to me. So welcome to the show.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
So, you know, obviously you're the fantasy football guru, but I'm really excited to just talk football.
Regular. Sure.
What's the word? Is it regular football?
No, real football.
Real football?
Right. Real football versus
I guess,
fake football.
Right. The counterpoint of fantasy is real.
Yeah, exactly. I am as well. I never get to actually talk real football. There was a time in my career at ESPN where there was a chance that I could have done that, where there was a an opportunity, and I thought about it for a nanosecond, and then I decided, you know what, I'm never, especially if I'm at this company, like the best I could ever do is be like the eighth banana on NFL Live. Like that, like the best I'm ever going to do, because we're a company that's obviously always going to have, you know, former athletes and former coaches and people with bigger names and everything like that. So the best I'm going to be is like sort of the nerdy analytics guy at the end of the table. I said, and no one's really over here doing fantasy football. So, you know, that's my love. And so let me just wrap myself in fantasy football further as
like,
opposed
like
to.
A blanket.
I actually chose the opposite path of what was being discussed for me at the time. And so just, I said, I actually want to go further into fantasy football, like less NFL. But it's fun to actually talk real football here for a change.
Yeah, well, you're the first banana on my show today.
I appreciate that.
I'm banana zero over here.
Yeah.
And so you're a Washington fan.
Yep.
And so you've spent a lot of time stewing in the occasional cesspool that is the NFC East.
Only since I was 5 years old.
I'm sorry.
It's interesting because I know you're talking to her later, but about something different. But I don't know how many people know this, but Diana Rossini, who's also a good friend of mine, started in D.C.
We
spent a lot of years in D.C. and covered the Redskins, which is how I first got to know her, was just, you know, following her on Twitter for her her reporting in that area. So that's a team she knows well as well. And so it's one of the initial things we bonded over.
She still breaks news about the Skins sometimes.
She's unbelievable. She's one of the underrated stars of ESPN, I think.
Well, she's the second banana today because she's coming after you. She's joining the show later to talk about what I think is the game of the week, Saints and Steelers.
Yeah.
And, she obviously knows both those teams, in particular the Saints, this season really well. But first, we're going to talk about the NFC East because I find it really interesting right now. Let me read the playoff scenarios to you
starter,
because I spent approximately 12 to 15 minutes trying to figure them out last night.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's like 12 to 15 minutes more research than I do normally. So I'm impressed.
12 to 15 minutes of my life I'll never get back.
Nope.
That'll immediately be irrelevant. But let me just lay this out for you, and then want you to tell me what you think is going to happen.
Okay.
And then we'll talk about the teams.
Right.
Stuff to say, we won't be talking about the New York football Giants. All right. Cowboys currently 8-6. They've got the Bucks and the Giants left. Easiest schedule. They win out, they win the division easily. If they finish 9-7 and the Skins win out, they also win the division still. So in pretty good shape, I'd say, to win one of those games. Washington 7-7. So Washington, Philadelphia, both 7-7. Washington's got the Titans and the Eagles left. If they win out and the Vikings win out, they probably won't make the playoffs.
Right.
If they win out and the Vikings go 1-1, they probably do make the playoffs. Eagles, because if they win out, they would be beating the Eagles in that scenario.
Right.
7-7. They've got the Texans, tough one, in Washington left. Now, if they win out and the Vikings lose once or Seattle loses twice, they can get the wild card. I don't really.
No.
If they go 1-1 and they lose to the Texans but beat Washington, they need the Vikings to lose twice and the Panthers to lose once. I think the Vikings have the Bears and the anyways.
I think that's right.
If the Eagles go 1-1,
it's NFC North, but
yeah, it's not easy. It's not easy as I recall. But if the Eagles go 1-1 and they lose to Washington, Then they need Washington to lose their other game, the Vikings to lose twice, and the Panthers to lose once. So it's pretty close, you know, between those two teams, right, assuming. So tell me what you think is going to happen first.
So I'll preface this by saying what I thought was going to happen last week, which is I thought the Eagles would go into Los Angeles and get their butts kicked. I thought the Redskins would go into Jacksonville and get their butts kicked.
Really?
So, oh my God.
Jacksonville. The imploding Jacksonville.
Have you watched any of Redskins football this year, Mina?
That's two train wrecks.
We are a flaming disaster. And so the Jags, my thought process was Jacksonville had actually played well at home previous couple games. Like they shot at the Colts, right? I mean, they kind of dominated the Colts like 2 weeks prior.
And then laid an egg.
Yeah. But that was on the road.
Yes.
Right. That game was in Tennessee. The Derrick Henry crazy game was in Tennessee.
Yes, that was in Tennessee, yes.
Right. So my thought process was, you know what, back at home.
It's Thursday too, yeah.
Right, yeah. So my thought process was, you know what, Jags back at home, their defense is still decent. Like the whole team's imploding, but their defense is, when I think about the Redskins, who are on their backup offensive line. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, you know, Trent Williams out there like, you know, like playing on like half a hamstring, and their whole offensive line is so decimated. And so they lost their starting guards. They lost their backup guards. And so they're on, you know, street free agents there in the offensive line on their fourth string quarterback who had been with the team less than 2 weeks. Jordan Reed not playing in this game. So their best in theory offensive weapon in the passing game also not there. And so you're just like, what are the odds that they go into one of these two teams is giving up for the season? And my thought process was that it was going to be Washington. And then, I mean, it was just shocking that they ended up winning that game, that Josh Johnson wins his first NFL game ever as a starter.
First of all, how dare you forget about the real weapon, Jeremy Sprinkle.
Jeremy Sprinkle,
truly impressive.
Second round tight end out of Arkansas. I love Jeremy Sprinkle, but I mean, like that, I mean, right, Josh Johnson to Jeremy Sprinkle. I mean, that's what we're talking about here, Nina. Yeah, I mean, come on. Yeah. Hail the Redskins. Hail victory. Come on. So I didn't think they would go into Jacksonville and win. I certainly didn't think Nick Foles and that beat up secondary would go into Los Angeles and beat the Rams. That was an even bigger shock to me. So I preface all that by saying nobody knows anything. But to answer your original question, what do I think happens? I think Dallas wins one of their final two games. I think the Eagles lose to the Texans this week. Who knows in week 17, I'd prefer on paper, you like the Eagles roster better than you do like the Redskins. And so, my expectation here is it wouldn't surprise me just because of the NFL is so goofy that the Redskins beat the Titans this week.
Oh, yeah. The Titans are the highest variance team in football.
Right.
Who knows? No one knows anything about the Titans.
100%. So, I mean, in theory, what they should do is they should just give Derrick Henry the ball 30 times, and because Washington's run defense has just completely fallen apart. Well, they played well last week.
I was going to say, that was surprising to me. The Washington run defense, 29th in DVOA. The pass defense, actually, 10th, which is impressive. I was really – so I actually watched – some of the Jaguars in game. I may be the only person in America who doesn't root for either of those teams.
Right.
Who watched out of morbid curiosity because I wanted to see what they did with Josh Johnson. You know.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah. And actually, I thought they did some good things. You know, I mean, they moved the pocket around, had him rolling out and bootleg, the kind of things you would expect them to do with Josh Johnson, who did not, you know, he wasn't committing costly turnovers. He gave them what they needed. I was really impressed in that game by Jonathan Allen, who I've been up and down on over the years. So I think the defense could stop the Titans.
And they load the box and say, we'll make Mariota beat us. Tom Sula's done an unbelievable job with their defensive line. And honestly, I know there's wide degrees of opinion, but as somebody who is a diehard Redskins fan, I like Jay Gruden. I think Jay Gruden's done a good job given all the injuries. Like, is he a perfect coach? No, none of them are, right? But, you know, given the injuries, like I said this, I saw him at the combine and I said this publicly last year. I said this like on the podcast or something. I said this nationally. I said he won't, but Jay Gruden should have gotten votes for coach of the year last year. And he looked at me like, are you kidding me? And I'm like, dude, you went 7-9 with a team that had 25 players on injured reserve. You won seven games. You know what I mean? And there were a couple of games that easily field goal here or there, like Hopkins missed one. Like they easily could have been a 9-7 team with a couple of better plays on special teams, and that was with 25 guys on IR. And it wasn't like it was every week there was somebody different. And this year,
happening.
This year he's won seven games again with a team that has 18 players on the IR, and my expectation is Jordan Reed will go there soon, so it'll be 19. And that's with two, I mean, that's unbelievable. I mean,
it kind of sounds like they need to look at their medical staff or something because...
Or their strength and conditioning, or, something,
yeah,
I would agree.
It's been a minute.
At some point, there's a, at some point, Mina, it feels like there's a, and I said this as well on my pod, which is like, at some point, you have to look at, is it the kind of players you're drafting? Is it the strength and conditioning?
Right.
Is it the medical staff? What's going on? Because that's weird. Like, it's the
especially
NFL.
Linemen.
It's a violent sport. But
so many offensive linemen, too.
So many linemen.
It's weird. I mean, it's funny because the other team we're talking about, the Eagles, has had been bitten by the injury bug as well, which, you know, often happens when
it's
the Super Bowl
sport.
After a
it
lot
is
of health, and then that's going to, regression's going to hit you. Not so much with the linemen. Oh, actually, they've had a few injuries on the two lines, but the secondary obviously is.
Yes.
But it turns out Avante Maddox is the best cornerback in the history of football.
Yeah.
I want to talk about the Eagles for a minute because I think, no offense, I'd much rather see the Eagles in the playoff from a football perspective.
Everyone
I'd rather
would.
See the Vikings in both of these teams, I think, just from an entertainment standpoint. But I feel like this week everyone's been trying to puzzle through what the hell happened with the Eagles, right? Not only how did they do it, because we've been talking a lot about, okay, is the blueprint out to stop the Rams? We see what they did, you know, don't bite on play action, drop seven, kind of give them the run. The Rams offensive line is not good. Setting that aside. And the defense certainly has the personnel to do that, to rush four, because they've got an incredible defensive line. But Nick Foles, explain it to me. What happened?
It's shocking to me, but the last, whatever, four games, I mean, you know, and yeah, I wish I had an explanation for Nick Foles, who is sort of, who is very up and down. Obviously, you know, he was very mediocre at the beginning of this year, had a magical playoff run last year, obviously. Now, in fairness to Nick Foles, at the beginning of this year, no Alshon Jeffrey. They didn't have Golden Tate. I mean, like, so
the first
two games of this year, like, they were sort of beat up offensively as well. And so, they still haven't, like, they finally feels like they've found a semblance of a run game with Josh Adams, although I know Smallwood had the big game against the Rams, but it feels like Adams has given them some somewhat balance on offense. You know, like, Nick Foles had a good day at the office. You know, one of the things that I remember talking with Chris Mortensen before the Super Bowl last year, our own Chris Mortensen. Mort's, you know, very, very smart, obviously. And you know, like, you know, BSing with him, and I said, who you got? It's like, Eagles by 10. I'm like, really? And I'm like, really? Eagles by 10. He's like, oh, yeah.
Wish I knew that.
Well, right. And so, like, I'm looking at him. I'm like, you know, and Mort, I don't think people know this. Mort is a great prankster. Mort has one of the best senses of humor. You don't see it on TV often, but Mort is hilarious if you ever get a chance to know him in person. And so Mort's a great prankster as well. And so I'm like, looking at him, like, are you pulling my leg here? And he's just like, look, Foles can't play in cold weather. He's like, but Dome Stadium? Like, he's like, that's why he was bad at, like, the other playoff game. He's like, but when Foles is in good weather, Foles is fine. Foles is great. He's like, you know, he's like, honestly, if they didn't have Foles, it'd be like 20. But with Foles, it's going to be 10 points. And so, anyway, so I haven't done any research on that.
Foles in cold weather. I'm pulling up the schedule. So they're
Foles in cold weather or
in Philadelphia and then going to Washington, just as you were saying that, I was thinking about it. Well, what do you think about, because I've heard a lot of Eagles fans and analysts kind of speculating about, because it was funny, and I said this to Mike Clay, friend of ours, Eagles fan, just now, that if I'm an Eagles fan watching that, I'm happy because you're beating the Rams, but I'm also filled with dread because of this nightmare scenario where Nick Foles, you know, wins out and suddenly you have to make this decision about Carson Wentz and the contract, and which isn't to say everybody knows Carson Wentz is a better quarterback than Nick Foles, but that's not what this is about. It's about the question of, well, one, how much should we pay this dude who gets injured a lot, which is reasonable, and also, why couldn't he do this? And I have... So I've been puzzling through this all week, and I want to know what you think of this. My theory is, so Wentz, or Foles rather, he was spreading it around a ton, got Alshon Jeffrey involved. He just throws it up there. He trusts his receivers.
Right.
Carson Wentz puts the world on his shoulders, and Doug Peterson calls the game and lets him do that, and when he's not healthy, some of that goes sideways, and I can't help but wonder if maybe Peterson called a better game for Nick Foles as a result of him feeling like he had to.
Yeah, maybe. And then also, if you sort of play out that gunslinger mentality, right?
Yeah.
So they come into this game, they're 6-7. They're like two touchdown underdogs. Like, it's Nick Foles. They're going up against, you know, Sean McVay, already in the Hall of Fame as a coach, right? Blah, blah, blah. All this stuff. And it's just like, you know, is there a little bit of like, F it?
Yeah.
Like, you know, like,
let's,
I mean,
just do it.
Like, we, you know, you, the great clip, the NFL film clip, you know, Philly, yeah, let's do it. You know, like, let's go for it. You know, in the Super Bowl, like, there's a little bit of,
like, looseness.
A little bit of Riverboat Ron in Doug Peterson, and maybe especially with Nick Foles as quarterback. Like, yeah. I wonder if there was, whether it's because of the type of player Foles is, or just sort of the circumstances, which, like, look, lost season for us. No one expects us to win this game. Like, screw it. Why not?
Yeah.
What the hell? You know, and so it's interesting, like one of the big long plays to Alshon Jeffrey, that he caught, which was sort of a jump ball, that, to your point about Foles is throwing it up there. I want to say Aguilar was also there. There were like two receivers.
Oh, yeah.
I think it was like, who was it for? And it almost
unclear.
Was like, you know, right. It was almost
who
like.
Who wants it?
Right. Exactly. And I feel like Alshon Jeffrey sort of like boxed out Aguilar. I mean, it's a week ago. I don't have it in front of me, but feels like, you know, feels like something like that. And the other thing is you just sort of think about it as a, from a franchise standpoint. And Howie Roseman obviously is somebody that is, you know, open-minded and creative. Like, if you're the Eagles, if you sit there and go like, look, Foles ain't as good as Carson Wentz. We all know this. We all agree this, right? But for whatever reason, you call a better game, the guys in the room respond to him better, whatever it is. What would Carson Wentz get on the open market if you were willing to trade him?
How dare you?
I don't think this happens.
How dare you put that in the universe?
I'm just, but.
Well, what does Nick Foles get? Because they've got the $20 million team option.
Right.
I think he has to be the starter, but they could hold on to him as a trade. Some team out there will trade for Nick. If he wins out and plays like he did last week, some dumb team's going to go for it.
Mina, I'm going to spend my Sunday rooting for Josh Johnson. I mean, like, are you kidding? I mean, Nick Foles is better than, like, you know, at least a third of the starting quarterbacks in the NFL this Sunday.
He's playing like it.
But, yeah.
You know, you can't count on him, too. I think, by the way.
Never trade him in division, but, I mean, since we're talking NFC East, don't you think Nick Foles is an upgrade over Eli Manning?
100%. Jacksonville could use him. The Bucs could use him. I mean, I said yesterday on a different show that I thought Joe Flacco was going to get paid a lot. And I don't like it.
Right.
But some team, I said Jacksonville, is going to do it.
I was just about to say, future Jacksonville Jaguar, Joe Flacco.
Good Lord. Anyways, to put a pin in the Foles thing, I think you're really right to point out that the run game was successful with Josh Adams because they really had a nice run-pass balance the first half, which they haven't had, and it set up the play action for the rest of the game. So it's funny because we're giving credit to Foles, but really it was probably like a million things happening once. It also comically, it just seemed to me like everyone was trying harder, maybe for the reasons you described.
I mean, so this is sort of a kind of an interesting thing here. We did this on the fantasy show yesterday on ESPN Plus as I'm a company man. So the last four games, Alshon Jeffrey has played with Nick Foles. Okay.
Man.
And this includes the playoff run. Basically, because remember, the first two games of the year, Alshon Jeffrey was out. So this is basically the Rams game and the playoff run. 20 catches on 26 targets. So he's catching 77% of his balls, 379 yards, 19 yards a catch, 3 touchdowns. Okay. And for my world, 75 fantasy points. Okay. Last 7 games with Carson Wentz, 31 catches on 45 targets. So catching 68%. Or 70%, 68.9. So 69% versus 77% for 324 yards, 10.5 yards per catch. So 9 yards fewer, less total yards, 2 touchdowns, 75 fantasy points. 75 fantasy points in 7 games with Wentz, 75 with 4 games with Foles. Again, like playoffs, but just right.
No, and isn't that funny, by the way, that this is such a tangent, but when certain wide receivers just develop chemistry. I was thinking about that with DeSean Jackson and how happy he is when Brian Fitzpatrick comes in the game. And there's been, especially covering fantasy, you guys keep pretty close track of that.
Of
who
course.
Does this quarterback go to? You know, the infamous Josh McGowan, Gary Barnage connection.
Right.
And I just did this story on DeAndre Hopkins and DeSean Watson.
Yeah.
And I was talking to them, to DeAndre, about sort of developing that chemistry and how just it's so much like a relationship. When they talk about it, it sounds like sometimes wide receivers and quarterbacks, they just click. And there's something about the timing and the rhythm of it, and they just like see each other and communicate really well. And maybe that's just the case here.
Well, and it's a little bit like a marriage, Mina. I mean, like we saw it a little bit with Ben and Antonio Brown earlier this year, right? Sort of sniping at each other. And those two guys are, you know, among the most successful quarterback wide receiver duos in NFL history. And it's so funny. Yeah. Tim Hasselbeck makes fun of me, but we talked about this. And so one of the things, we've, and we do it sort of half jokingly, but sort of half serious as well, which is like looking at who Tom Brady puts on his Instagram on Saturday nights. Well, and so, like, I've had Teddy on my show a number of times. So Teddy does our show every Thursday, and he talks about Tom's triangle of trust.
Oh, my God.
Who's in the triangle of trust? Which I just love that phrase. So I'm constantly evaluating who's in my triangle of trust.
Can I get in there?
Yeah. No, absolutely.
Maybe today.
Yeah, 100%.
At least today.
You, Stefania, and Daniel, I'll kick field out. That's a pretty good triangle of trust. So, basically the idea is like, and we were joking because like he put a Instagram photo of Josh Gordon, like, you know, like he put a photo of Josh Gordon a couple of weeks ago on
hello.
Tom Brady did. And so we mentioned that on Fans from Loud. Tim's like, rah, you know, and I'm just like, I know you think it's a dumb thing.
No,
you know what I mean?
It's not a dumb thing. And Russell Wilson used to do this with receivers too. Like he was really close to Jermaine Kearse, much to the frustration, and he would force the football to him in games.
Right.
I swear to God.
But
someone needs to do analysis on this.
It'd be amazing. Like Tim's whole point was stop it. Tom Brady doesn't even know who's on his Instagram. He's probably got a whole team that, you know, posts and everything like that. I said, I bet you he sort of does. And I bet you that's just a way to sort of signal to whoever. And like, certainly it took a couple of weeks, but Josh Gordon it's a larger triangle of trust, you know, cause it's Gronk, James White and, Edelman. But yeah, I mean, like Brady and Edelman, like that's a thing. And so, you know, and that's one of the reasons why, you know, you think about Washington, and there really isn't any trust between
anyone, literally anyone in that organization.
Right. And like, wait, Mason Foster's on social media or his cousin, supposedly.
Oh,
who
man.
Knows? The whole thing. But you know what? It's interesting is we just sort of talk about quarterbacks and wide receiver connection, Mina, just to bring it back to the NFC East. Is Dak Prescott and Amari Cooper. Because Dak and Dez, for years, I mean, for the 2 years, 2 years, that they were together, there was clearly, you know, not a connection there. They just didn't, whatever reason, couldn't get on the same page, and Dez was worse with Dak than he was, you know, and you could argue about age and injuries and everything like that, but he just did not produce with Dak Prescott under center. Meanwhile, Amari Cooper is literally... one of the best receivers in the NFL right now. So, here you go. Cooper's only played, here's a stat that, one of my guys found. Okay. Amari Cooper's played 7 games with the Cowboys. He already has 146 more receiving yards than any other Dallas wide receiver all year long. So Michael Gallup's been there from day one.
I liked him as a prospect too.
I did too, but right, you know, or you think about, you know, whatever, Allen Hurns or any of these guys, like that's how much Amari Cooper has meant to this team, and he turned their season around.
Well, this is why you're so good at what you do, because you knew I wanted to segue to the Cowboys, and you did it for me. And
there you
just
go.
Served it up to me on a platter, and it's interesting you bring up Amari, because I was thinking about him watching the Colts game, and
sure.
The Cowboys got smushed, literally smushed, by the Colts offensive line. Quentin Nelson, there was a scene, oh my gosh, like it's a movie. They were at the goal line, and the camera was so zoomed in, I thought it was a human thigh, but it was one of his arms as he pancaked a dude.
Right.
That guy is scary. The Colts offensive line is really good. They completely owned the Cowboys at the line of scrimmage. But
I think that's one of the underrated great storylines. Colts offensive
Incredible.
Line. Just the return of the entire Colts, but just the Colts offensive line. I mean, we talk so much about Andrew Luck and his career and how much he's been hit. And like, I think I want to say coming to the season, like only Cam Newton had been hit more on a per game basis since Luck. I'm doing that stat off the top of my head, but so don't kill me if I'm wrong on that, but it's something like that.
Yeah.
And then the offensive line, and you know, kudos to Chris Ballard and his staff over there, but they have turned it around in a massive, massive way.
Completely. And they own them. I'm not too worried about that. Now, I'm sure you saw Marlon Mack went on 2 of my fantasy teams, by the way.
Just nice job.
Behind that offensive line was destroying them.
And we talked about this on the both on the fantasy show and the podcast. Look at Marlon Mack's numbers with Ryan Kelly and without Ryan Kelly. So, you know, their starting center obviously returned to that game against Dallas, and it made a huge difference. They were able to run the ball effectively.
The contrast is on the other side of the ball. So I'm not too worried about the Dallas defense, even though it wasn't the linebacker. Listen, that linebacker unit is splendid. LVE, Jalen.
Oh,
but they were kind of owned in this game. I'm not super worried about that as we talk about the Cowboys. I am worried about this Cowboys offense because you mentioned Amari.
Right.
Obviously, that connection is so key to them. The Colts handled it pretty well, which is they played a lot of zone because, you know, they weren't sticking a guy on him because Amari Cooper is one of the best route runners in the NFL. He will destroy you. So give him some room. You know what I mean?
If you look at the numbers as well, Dak does not play nearly as well versus a zone than he does when man coverage.
There you go. Colts.
So,
not Eberflus.
So, I wonder how many teams know that or are going to adjust their defense that much.
They do now. They all listen to the Mina Kimes show.
Podcast, right. Yeah. They're all tuning in. But it helps us when we try to evaluate these players for fantasy. But I honestly think, look, how do you win in the playoffs, right? I'm a big believer in cliches are cliches for a reason, right? Because they're true.
Yeah.
And so in general, like more often than not, if you can run the ball and play good defense, you got a pretty good shot in December and January. And so the Cowboys can run the ball and they can play good defense. So like, do I like them more than the Rams? Do I like them more than the Saints in the NFC? No, of course not. They're still the Cowboys. And as a Redskins fan, I personally hate the Cowboys, but
naturally.
But I honestly think as long as Dak doesn't implode, I think they've got a real shot.
My one concern, that offensive line. Okay.
Sure.
So again, I think the defense will be fine. I think, yes, you can stop Amari, but there were a couple guys on that line that I had never heard of. Like talk about,
yeah.
I mean,
no Zach Martin on Saturday.
No Zach Martin. And you see such a big difference, man, with Joe Looney and at center and Tyron Smith, not what he was. And, if I had to pinpoint one concern I have about Dallas and why I don't think they'll win in the playoffs, that would be it.
Yeah. I think that's completely fair. But, I'm more like, who's going to get to the playoffs? Like, I would love, by the way, I actually like Jason Garrett.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, like, listen, I'm a Redskins fan. I love Jason Garrett.
Yeah.
No. I don't think that Jason Garrett's been, this is the first year he's had a defense in a long time.
True.
This is the first year he's had a defense in a long time. It's been, in terms of offense, it's, even in the Dez, Cole Beasley is a nice piece. But when Cole Beasley is your second best pass catcher, which he has been for the last couple of years, all due respect to, our current colleague, Jason Witten, who was out there for a number of years, who's, future Hall of Famer. But I don't know that I think
you
Jason,
feel like he hasn't been given a lot to work with.
I feel like he hasn't been given a lot to work with. I think coaching in the NFL is really hard. I think that, a play here or there, a bad call here or there is the difference between the playoffs and something else. I go back to the Redskins, right? And so not to be a Jay Gruden apologist, because make no mistake, he's not a perfect coach. But like I think about that Texans game, okay? And the Texans game in which they lost, I believe, by 2 points. The Redskins lost to the Texans by 2 points. There was a long pass play down the sideline to Josh Dotson where there was insane pass interference that was not called. And they end up trying like a 60-yarder or something with Dustin Hopkins and he misses, or a 55 or something like that, and they misses, and that's the game. But if that play gets called correctly, and the NFL later came out 2 days later and said that should have been called. I mean, they announced it. They
everything's different. The narrative's different. We talk about these teams differently.
So assume, Dustin Hopkins is a pretty good kicker, has a 25-yard field goal, even if they do nothing else, because play was, time was running out there. They beat the Texans right there, and the Redskins are now 8-6 instead of 7-7.
And then suddenly it's a completely different conversation.
Right.
I'm with you. Especially
and that happens every week with every
guys going
game.
For it on fourth, and they're successful when they're not. It's very rare.
Yeah, and different calls and here and there. And so my point is that, there have been times where, not to be an apologist for Jason Garrett either, but it's interesting, right? So Jason Garrett, I think if the Cowboys make the playoffs, all's right with the world, right? They win the division.
Yes.
They win the next two games. They win the division. All's right with the world. They split. They don't get into the playoffs. Jason Garrett's probably looking for a job, don't you think?
Yeah, I think they have to make it to the playoffs, which is the most likely outcome.
I would agree.
For him to keep his job. I guess I'll push back a little bit. I do agree that so much of how we talk about coaches is dictated by randomness and like balls going a certain way, calls going a certain way. They have a very uncreative offense, and they have had for a few years.
Fair.
And to me, that's on him for not changing that, despite the personnel
limited.
Issues.
Sure.
But
he's an offensive guy, and that's his sort of calling card.
He should be better. But it's funny, though. Like, you're bringing up Washington's a good point. So often coaches are hamstrung by bad GMing, and then we blame the coach as though the coaches are,
Right. I mean, couldn't you argue, again, I can't believe I'm on the defending Jason Garrett side,
but
couldn't you argue S's and giggles, if Jason Garrett, and this may not be the right way, but if Jason Garrett's sitting here looking, I got Dez Bryant, on his last legs. I got Jason Witten, who's, not the fastest guy in the world. Here's what I got. I got an outstanding running back, and I got an okay defense prior to this year. my best shot at winning games is 16-13. I got to slow everything down. I got a rookie quarterback because I think Romo's coming back at some point. Remember, I'm going back to his rookie year. You know, yeah. Like, think about it. So the Dak's rookie year, you think like, hey, let's just slow everything down, dumb it down, you know, that kind of stuff. Simple, right? Everything like that. And then it sort of works. Yeah, I mean, again, it may not be the right decision. I haven't really done a deep dive on thinking about the Cowboys, but I just wonder if, rightly or wrongly, given the personnel that he has, that he thinks this is the, you know, it's not the most creative offense, but the best shot I've got at winning. I'm not going to, between Dak and, you know, Amari's just one guy who we got mid-season, right? And mm-hmm. So it's hard to sort of change your entire offensive philosophy, you know, halfway through the season. But I said, like, going into the season, you don't have Dez. You're looking out there. I got Allen Hurns and, you know, a rookie and Cole Beasley and whatever, and no Jason Witten. Got a rookie quarterback and I got Ezekiel Elliott. But I think our defense is going to be pretty good. So I think, you know, I think my best shot at winning games is grinding this out, 16-13, being last in, plays per game and everything like that, and just trying to grind it out. I got good special teams. Again, it may not be the right call, but, you know, whatever. They're 8-6. Anyway, I don't know.
So
you're looking at me like,
Matthew
Berry buying any of this.
Loves Jason Garrett, guys. You heard it here first. All right. Speaking of grinding out.
I don't know. And here's part of my problem, and I'm curious if you find this. Here's a good question for you, Mina Kimes, on the Mina Kimes podcast. Because you interview a lot of players. You do all these, you know, these features and everything like that. Do you find yourself, after you meet athletes and or coaches, that you feel differently about them in evaluating them? So like, so I will tell you, like, I've met Jason Garrett a number of times, like at the combine and various things. And he has two things to me. He's always unbelievably kind. And not only is he kind in answering my questions, but he always, he understands what I do and doesn't dismiss it. Like, there's a lot of coaches that look at me and sort of roll their eyes or, you know, like, this is obviously disguised as a fantasy question and blah, 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 you know, and like Jason Garrett will say, like, look, for your purposes, I don't think he's going to have a big game. Like, I think he's an important cog of our offense, but I don't think he's going to put up fantasy points for, like, anyway, he doesn't need to do that. Like, my job is just to ask questions and interpret what I get as answers into fantasy data. But there's something very, very sweet and, welcoming about that.
Well, it makes me root for them often.
Right.
If I spend a lot of time with a guy, I certainly don't want him to get injured ever. And I find myself, the guys I've covered, I'm rooting for them a little bit, especially
right.
the ones I like, you know.
Right.
I don't like everyone. You know, like I did a story on Von Miller a few years ago, and that's one that actually changed my perspective of him a little bit, just because we talked at length about how he does what he does, how he's so flexible and freaking, you know, because sometimes you just look at them and you say, oh, he's an athletic freak. And then you spend time with them and you realize, well, this is everything that goes into that. And my favorite thing about Von Miller that I learned while spending time with him was that he not only wears those glasses, he's basically blind out
right.
there, but that he is deeply asthmatic and allergic to grass. So every time I see him just destroying quarterbacks, I think of that little nerdy kid whose mom used to have to drive him to Boy Scouts with a giant inhaler and strap it in. And plug it and had to hide that he was playing football from his parents. So I adore him. But I guess, I don't know. Unless I learn something about them and their relationship with the team and the football stuff, it doesn't really change what I think. But I definitely root for the guys that I've
rooted. Maybe you're a little bit more like, listen, I'll be critical of the Dallas Cowboys, everything like that. But it is hard for me to be, but by the way, generally, this is just my personality. It is hard for me to generally be, openly negative. You know, occasionally I get all fired up and I go on a rant. I went on a rant about Drew Brees yesterday, but, generally speaking, I try to be very positive in terms of my public sort of, there's enough hate and negativity in the world. I don't need to add to it.
What a nice message. Well,
and whenever I do go on a rant, it's always specifically about their play on the field. It's never about them personally, obviously, or anything like that.
Yes. That's a good rule. All right, Matthew. So we always do this with our guests.
Okay.
And now it's time for Dinks and Dunks. I'm getting paid for this, right?
That's Stugatz. He's not getting paid for any of this. So five questions, one from my dog, Lenny.
Okay.
Apologize in advance. I don't vet his questions.
Fair.
And I will honor his request by reading in his voice.
Okay.
I've really struggled. By the way, I had Matt Hasselbeck on last week. I was so anxious about speaking to Matt Hasselbeck, my hero, really, in my dog's voice. And it was as bad as I imagined. Not you, though. You, I will,
favorite?
I will.
Oh, I appreciate that.
I'll talk in my dog's voice.
Yeah, fair enough. I've never played for the Seahawks. Is he's your favorite Seahawk?
No. Favorite all time is probably Marshawn Lynch.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair.
Not to go recent. You know, there are older guys I like. I'm a huge Kenny Easley is like one of my all time favorites. But, all right. Well, you know what? Actually, let me ask you that first.
Okay.
Who's your all time favorite football player?
My all-time favorite football player, all-time favorite Redskin or all-time favorite football player? I have to think about it, my all-time favorite football player. My all-time favorite Redskin is sort of a tie between John Riggins and Daryl Green.
Daryl Green's good one.
Yeah, between, you know, just that's my childhood as well. Yeah. That's when I grew up. And so just, although Art Monk would be a close third, just, you know, the way they carried themselves both on and off the field, very different personalities, obviously, Riggins and Green. But anyway, I admired both of them for how they played on the field and off the field.
Question two, what's the best movie you saw this year?
Wow, best movie I saw this year. I didn't get a chance to see very many movies this year.
I think of you as a movie guy.
I am a huge movie guy, and it's all in the off season because like during football season, I never see anything. I can tell you, here's how I answer this. The best two-thirds of a movie I saw this season was A Star is Born. Mm. And I absolutely hate, with a fiery passion, the last third of that movie.
Thank you! This is my take, too!
I absolutely hate.
Staring into my soul
right
now.
God.
The beginning of the movie is so good. It's electric. The parking lot scene when she first sings.
Yeah.
And then it just veers off course.
It veers off course. And so...
No spoilers, though.
Well, I was going to say, spoiler alert, don't tune... all right. So at the end of this, I want to do a rant about the third act, but we'll cut it off where there's a spoiler. So you can stop listening if you haven't seen it yet. So, okay. But yes, I hate with a fiery passion, Mina, hate the third act.
It's crazy because like I said, the beginning was so good. So
amazing.
Good. I was on the edge of my seat and the scene in the bar when they meet, and it just became really, I thought, cliche in the end. So we're the same on this.
So I have to think about that. I'm also, did it come out this year? Did Coco come out this year? I don't think Coco came out this year.
I saw it this year and I cried many tears on the plane.
It's so great. I love kids' movies.
They're really good now.
Yeah.
That's different from when we were kids.
Yeah,
they're getting really good.
I love kids. I have twin daughters that are 7 and my wife is just like, you were born to have daughters because I watch all those movies. Like not only have I seen Frozen, you know, 8 billion times, but I have secretly watched it once or twice without my daughters. Like, you know, seriously, would you like to build a snowman, Mina?
I would love to. Are you in the Paddington 2 gang? Have you seen Paddington 2?
I did see Paddington 2. And I feel like I saw you once and I ran into you somewhere and I said to you, because I remember this tweet from you, and I love you on Twitter. Like, your Twitter feed is a national treasure. But I remember you just tweeted once, why is Paddington in jail? Which just cracked me up because all the commercials were happening. And yeah, and it was a good question why Paddington was in jail. And so the answer is, by the way, and I came up to you, I said, by the way, the answer is, that he was framed. It was a case of mistaken identity. That's how Paddington winds up in jail. But don't you worry, Paddington manages to win over.
Wow, we just ruined Paddington 2 for
exactly.
all of our listeners. It's
cute,
a great
though.
Movie. Great
it
movie.
Is, it's actually,
the
it's
marmalade
actually super
scene
cute.
In the kitchen. It's incredible.
Adorable.
All right. Question number three. There's a right answer to this, so I'm curious if you have it. Is the touchback rule on fumbles good or bad?
The worst rule in professional
sports. Thank you.
Sports.
Wow, we are really vibing today.
Yeah, you and I.
Some people are defending it.
How can they possibly defend it? What's their defense of it?
It's horrible.
It's awful. It penalizes teams in a very significant way. Anywhere else on the field, you lose the ball, you get
unless
right there.
They recover it, which
right,
is fine.
You cover it, right? But instead, you get 20 extra yards. Like, it's the most ridiculous rule in football. It's either should be the other team's ball at like the 5 or something like that, or at the 1 where it gets, wherever it gets, goes out of bounds. Like on the Tommy Lee Lewis one from Monday night, it should have been like out at the 3. Should have been, Panthers ball at the 3.
Or put the offense back at the 20 or something and have them lose down or something.
Yeah.
It's so disproportionate and it's so random because like that ball goes 2 inches to the right and often the defense didn't do anything. In this case, they did strip, but you know, you're rewarding them for nothing. Nothing.
And by the way, it's inconclusive too, by the way. When I think about like I grew up in College Station, Texas. So my dad teaches at Texas A&M University. So my two schools are Syracuse, where I went to college, and Texas A&M, where I grew up.
Oh.
And, you know, I don't know if you remember, I don't know how much college football you watch, but Texas A&M played a primetime game against Clemson. Earlier this year.
I missed that one.
The second game of the year, and they ended up getting the ball back and they had a chance and they missed the 2-point conversion. But that was a key play where basically the Texas A&M player, the wide receiver, same thing, out of the end zone. It was called a fumble on the field, but it was very hard to determine if it went, you know, slightly outside the pylon or inside the pylon. And because it was inconclusive, that stood. It was a ridiculous field, and then Clemson gets the ball back. A&M held them, and they ended up having to rush, and they minute. But still, it was awful. And by the way, as we just talked about sort of coaching stuff, right, Texas A&M wins that game. You know, what does Clemson's season look like this year? They're
the
in the playoffs
effect.
Now. What does Jimbo Fisher's first year at A&M look like? I mean,
everything's random. Yeah. Yep. When I was complaining about it during the game, some Seahawks fans were like, well, we benefited from this. There's been a couple with Earl Thomas. And I said, yeah, and I loved it when we benefited, but I still knew it was bad.
Right.
That's what being a fan is.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, yeah.
You like the Bobby Wagner blocked field goal. I knew that was illegal, but I loved it.
Right.
Totally illegal.
Right.
Okay, question four. Have you ever given Field Yates a wedgie?
No, I have thought about it many times. I have absolutely thought about it many times. His youthful appearance drives me crazy.
Me too.
We're not that.
Me too.
We're not that different in age. I mean, we're like
just a little
I think
bit.
I think we're 15 years apart. I want to say in terms of our actual age, but we look, you know, 40 years apart in terms of like, because I look older than I am, and he looks obviously younger than he is, and so. But I think the reason I haven't given him a wedgie, Mina, is because what would happen is, and this is the other part that drives me crazy about Field, is I could give him a wedgie and his reaction would be like, that was fun. Good for you. Good prank on you, Matthew. Like, it would be like, you're not going to get mad at me. You're not going to get upset. Like, and nothing bothers
him. Unflappable.
Nothing bothers him. I'm going to ask you a question that came up on our podcast about Field. He revealed this secret. I don't know if this came up on yours. When he stays in hotels, and you know, he often stays here in Bristol. He lives in Boston with his lovely fiance Chapin, but he stays in hotels. Sometimes he'll come down here, you know, and stay in a hotel a couple days a week here in Bristol. In the morning, he makes the bed. Which
That's
is the most
lovely.
Field Yates everything.
He's a better human than both you and I.
Yes, 100%. 100%. But we did 10 minutes on this.
God.
I was just like, you make the bed in your hotel. You understand that's part of what you pay for.
Wow.
And he's just like, it's a day setter. It's how you start.
A day setter.
Right. I was just like, that's the most Field Yates thing ever, that you make the bed in hotel rooms.
He is a delight. All right. Last question's from Lenny, as always.
Yeah.
I do his voice. I did this in front of Matt Hasselbeck.
I understand.
Can you imagine?
Do you want me to turn so
it's
I don't?
It's the shame. I don't feel shame around you.
Okay, fair enough. Yep.
Matthew.
Yeah.
Ugh, every time. I really, this is like an exercise in me losing the respect of my peers
and
colleagues.
I can look away, though.
No.
I know you and I
look into my eyes when I do this.
Okay. I'm looking
Matthew,
at you.
Quarterbacks change. General managers change. Coaches change. But owners are forever. What does it feel like to have no hope as a football fan? He's talking about Dan Snyder.
Yeah. You know, the easy answer is to just bag on Dan Snyder. And there is no question that he
is easy and correct.
Huh?
Easy and correct.
Yes. But the one thing I will say about him is that he wants to win. And I don't think every owner does. Like, he wants to win desperately, Lenny. He wants to win desperately. He spent money foolishly, but at least he spent money. Like, he is not shy about opening up the checkbook. And so I think the biggest, issue would be that I have about Dan is that I think sometimes he chooses the wrong people around him.
Mm.
And I think he's been given bad advice in a lot of areas over the years. And so some of that's on him as well. And I think if you were to get an interview with Dan, I think he would say he had made some mistakes. You know, I think there's a lot of things that he would do differently if given the opportunity to do that again. Look, it's a tough question, and I don't mean to dodge it, and I don't. I'm sure it's not the answer you expected.
Well, Lenny.
But
don't get it twisted.
I'm honest, and I will cop to this. Okay, I have a good relationship with a number of people in the Redskins organization. It is one of the reasons why I'm very blatant about the fact that I'm a Redskins fan in air and on, because I don't know what, I'm very transparent about that, and I enjoy that relationship, and I have no interest in destroying that relationship. And there's literally nothing for me to gain by saying anything negative about Dan Snyder or anything like that. And so I think objective criticism is okay. And like I said, I think he would be the first to admit there's things that he wishes he did differently at well.
Let me zero in on what he asked, though, what the dog asked.
Okay.
Do you have hope? Forget the Dan Snyder stuff.
Yeah.
Because you're in some pretty dire straits right now with the quarterback
dire
situation
straits.
And Alex's contract and... Like, when is this ship going to turn around in the next?
It has to. I have to believe it. I have to believe it does. I'm not a Bruce Allen fan. And so I think a change at that position, is something that would make a lot of sense for the Redskins as an organization. And so, that's sort of my hope. But look, even with 25 guys on IR last year, even with 18 guys on IR this year, they're 7-7. They're still alive for the playoffs. Prior to Alex, I mean, they were first place in the NFC East before losing their quarterback. I mean, what team loses two quarterbacks, Mina? I mean, like,
You
think that's karma? You think there's some sort of the universe?
It's worse. Wouldn't you rather finish, you know, with a losing record? You're stuck on the treadmill of mediocrity.
Yeah, look, by the way, that's my podcast name, The Treadmill of Mediocrity. Tune into that. There's some argument about that. I used to think like, hey, I wish they just finished 6-10. They're not winning a Super Bowl with Josh Johnson. Like, finish 6-10.
Yeah.
And they didn't, right? And then they go into Jacksonville. But then the other point that was made to me is like, you know what? After a certain point, all draft picks are crapshoots. And so whether you get an early pick or not, I mean, like, so why not give yourself a rooting opportunity here? The only thing that I want them to lose is I don't want Mr. Snyder to think that the current situation is acceptable. So, I mean, we've lost this, I want to say it was Dan Steinberg that put this out. It was either, Dan Steinberg on Twitter, I think. It's certainly not mine, but pointed this out, which is that, the Redskins will have, a worse record under Bruce Allen than they will have under, I think Bruce Allen's been there 9 years. Mm. They've had a worse record under Bruce Allen than they did under Vinny Serrato. Which, I mean, tells you everything. Like, at the end of the day, ultimately, that's on Bruce. And so, at some point, you got to make a change. And Dan, who, so, you know, at the beginning of his career as owner of the Redskins, was quickly going through, you know, personnel changes, everything like that. He's been very, very patient. Actually, too patient now, I think.
Well, you've been very patient with me. Thanks for coming on. Come back, all right? We're going to be joined next by Dan Orsini to talk about Steelers and the Saints. All right. I am joined now by NFL reporter, host, insider, friend, Diana Russini. Diana, we're friends, right?
I just put the word friends in quotes.
Wow.
I've had a really difficult time trying to figure out where you fit in my life, because I don't really associate with nerds, but I feel like I've made an exception over the last few years because, you know, the one thing I love about having you in my life is
how comfortable we are
with each other and the hot takes we text each other with. If we could just print those up or put them out and release them, I think the world would be really scared off by the way we talk to each other.
I think if somehow our texts were leaked, both of our careers would end in an instant, like a nuclear bomb. Matthew was talking about his relationship with Field Yates when I asked him if he's ever given him a wedgie. And I think sometimes I feel like I'm the Field to your Matthew, because if we went to high school together, like, we would be secret friends, maybe. Like, you would definitely run with a cool crowd, but then you'd also be my friend quietly and maybe defend me from the other cool kids.
Oh, you're so the girl that, like, grew up next door to me that I have to be friends with, because we go back to, like, pre-K, but then, like, we grew up, went to, you know, wound up in different circles, so I have to be loyal to you, but... you know, when you get shoved in the locker and I walk by, I kind of give you a wink, like, don't worry about it, girl. I got you. But yeah, I definitely think we'd be friends in high school, but, you're a nerd, but I'm a nerd too. I just, wear a little bit more makeup than you, and I hide it better.
I really love getting your critiques of makeup when I'm on television. So you are a nerd and you're a football nerd. And I love talking about the game and the teams you cover. And the reason I wanted to talk to you this week, Diana, despite your constant cruelty and bullying, is there's a really, really good game involving a couple teams you know pretty well, Steelers and the Saints. I'd argue the game of the weekend. It's interesting because there are two teams that feel, even though the Saints have a significantly better record, it almost feels like they've, and this is such a prisoner of the moment thing to say, but it feels like, you know, things are kind of going up for Pittsburgh, and the Saints, despite winning, are struggling. Do you feel like that's an actual narrative, or do you think people are over-concerned about New Orleans?
I think the other side of it is more about Pittsburgh. I think everyone felt like the sky was falling. They start the season off a little slow. They win six, they lose three. And, Mina, if you really look back at those three games that they lost, right, in Denver, it's like a blocked field goal, ball knocked out on the one-inch line, defensive lineman intercepts Ben. It was like the flukiest play.
Yeah.
You know, they lose to the Chargers. They're up 23-7 at half. I think there was some stat that at home at that point, when they'd been up by that many points, they won 174 games and lost only one. So that whole thing was just odd as well. And then in Oakland, right, Ben has that amazing game, 25 for 29. He had two TDs. Then they have the issues with the X-ray machine. The kicker slips on the field. So their losses, while obviously in the category of win-loss, it says L, there was just some really fluky, weird things. So I think that they were getting a lot more pressure put on them when the reality is they are a really good team. And then they just brought down, you know, the big old dragon of the Patriots. And listen, if you can slow the Patriots down, I mean, New England scored 10 points on them. They were 0-for-3 in the red zone.
What?
The fact that they weren't able to do that, I think we are downplaying what this Steelers team can do, because I do think that the New Orleans Saints, especially their offense, they're like that sparkly ornament that we're all looking at, but it certainly has some problems.
Well, let's talk about the Steelers a little bit, because I agree with you. I think, like, they can take down everyone on a good day, right? But for some reason, the fact that they beat New England now almost makes me worried about the postseason. Like, I was so impressed by this Steelers defense, and I've been impressed by them. I've been talking them up for a while now. But what they did with Brady, you know, how they were able to completely eliminate Gronk from the game, and they were doubling him and Edelman a lot. And, you know, just Brady, he was kind of seeing ghosts out there. It was interesting because, you know, TJ Watt had that sack, and he's been really good over the last few weeks. But by and large, it wasn't like he was under tremendous pressure all game, but it was enough. And when I look at this Steelers front and I see how good they are, how good Javon Hargrave is, how good they are with Tuitt back, I start to think, man, this is like probably one of the better, it could be one of the better defenses in the playoffs.
And the thing is, that's not what the storyline has been all year long. I remember when the Steelers played the Chiefs early in the season, and they were just ripping up that secondary.
Yeah.
But it seems like they've fixed the mistakes and almost are learning as the season goes on what they're good at doing. And the fact that the Patriots only put up 10 against them, I think that tells you that they're arriving. And what better time to arrive than against this New Orleans Saints team who, you know, you look back at their situation over the last two games. All right, so they put up a bunch of points against Tampa Bay. They lose to Dallas. And we all watched that game. Dallas, I mean, that was do or die for them. And the amount of emotion they had in that game completely outdid the Saints.
Yeah.
Because the Saints at that point had won 10 in a row, right? So their intensity level was just, they were just so used to winning. And I think Dallas just shocked them. And then, you know, this Panthers defense on Monday night, they're good. The Panthers D is really good. And you expected them, or at least you expected the Saints to put up more points there. But in the end, I think even for the Panthers, they were fighting for their lives. So it was a bit of an aberration for them. But I think for the Saints' mentality going into this game, and I got to give credit to Sean Payton's maturity, which we don't always say that about Sean Payton, because he's shown some signs of immaturity over the years. But I think Payton has gone from really wanting to find creative ways to win to now just not caring and just trying to get the win, you know, instead of trying to be creative and flashy. And it's something that we always give the Patriots credit for, right? They just find a way.
Yeah.
I think the Saints are becoming the team that they're just finding a way.
That's interesting because, yeah, I do feel like sometimes the Saints' offense gets a little too cute. And there were a couple points in this game, by the way, the win where, like, the shovel pass to Taysom Hill, I think it was in the first series. I was like, what are you doing there? Or, you know, having Tommy Lee Lewis, who, you know, fumbled in this atrocious touchback rule Matthew and I were complaining about earlier, applied. Why is Tommy Lewis have the ball there was kind of going through my head. But by and large, you're right. I think you're right to point out, like, this Saints team is winning in wildly different ways, you know, and that's interesting to watch, especially in contrast to, I think, kind of what we're seeing from the Rams. And these last two games, I think it's undeniable that the defense, you know, the defense has been, forget two games. The defense has been stepping up for a while now. I mean, do you think it's fair to say that the Saints defense, which came out of the gates so horribly, is one of the better defenses in the NFL?
No, I'm not there yet. I'm still not sold on them, and I'm with them all the time. And I feel like I'm going to get put down by the Who Dat Nation, but for saying this, but it's the truth. They still make me nervous in terms of their secondary. I still think that has to be an area they improve. Eli Apple's gotten better the last two games.
Much better, yeah.
Back there. But I do think that, you know, their front's really good. Really, I mean, Cameron Jordan plays his heart out there. He makes some plays.
He's
can't
incredible.
Believe how good that guy is.
Yeah.
But I still don't think they're a top defense. Not yet. Dennis Allen's done a really good job of making some corrections. And, you know, I remember talking to some players on defense, like, what have you guys been doing different? And the way it was explained to me, and it sounds like basic coaching, but I haven't really heard a player explain it to me this way, the way it was. Basically saying, like, Dennis Allen's looking at them going, okay, here's what you're good at. Here's what I need you to do. We need to come and meet in the middle here. Because and a lot of these guys feel like they can just play. They can really just be themselves. You know, we've heard so many times where guys just feel like they're stuck in a system. I do think that this defense is bought in. And I will say the charisma around the team, and I don't tend to oversell that with teams, but the Saints definitely have it. The Chicago Bears have it right now. The defense is taking pride in the fact that they're keeping the team afloat right now.
Right.
That they're the ones getting all the attention now.
It's
great to see because the Saints team, you don't get extra points for style or the way you win, right? It only matters if you get the win. And I think that they've embraced that, which is why, you know, Alvin Kamara snapped at me in the locker room when I was like, you know, there's some people who think you guys lost your magic. He's like, lost our magic? We're 12-2. Like, it's okay if we don't always carry the team, you know? And so I think that the defense is definitely getting some confidence.
Interesting.
And, you know, obviously they're going to have a super big challenge in keeping Ben in the pocket because we know those broken plays with him when he scrambles, you know, to hit those guys in stride are the big problems.
Yeah, Pro Bowl snub, Alvin Kamara, by the way. That was definitely one of the more
surprising
ones. But, you know, maybe we'll give him a little bit of motivation. I think you're right to, by the way, single out the secondary as being, like, if there is something that could go wrong for them, you know, I would probably look to that. And, you know, they held Cam Newton to, you know, 55% and 150 yards, but Cam Newton was playing with a bum shoulder. I'm not sure, and the Panthers wide receivers are no great shake, so I'm not really sure there's too much to take away from that. I do think, you know, Marshon Lattimore, after a rough start, and alluded to he had a pretty rough start, has been lights out, and Eli Apple really does seem to have solidified the other side. Same with the safeties, too. Von Bell was a beast in this game. Just not only covering really well, but, you know, he had the sack and he was just really, really, really good. Marcus Williams, too. So they looked really good lately, but I think you're right, Diana. Like, the strength of this defense has been the run defense for quite a while now. And by any metric, they're usually in the top three or something in stopping the run. And the pass has been a little bit more variable. So I'm curious to see how they handle this Steelers attack that looked significantly better after laying an egg. I think it's the second time I said laying an egg today. Because they were able to get the run going with Jalen Samuels, who many people discovered existed last week. Do you think that rushing attack behind that incredible Steelers offensive line will give the Saints, again, one of the best run defenses in football, any trouble?
I do, but I also think that the formula for this Saints team right now against Big Ben is the passing game. I think it's they can't let those broken plays become those big plays. You know, we think of Russell Wilson, Deshaun Watson, we saw Cam. You know, we know Ben's not running. He's scrambling to throw that. And he's just those extended plays, and we know his arm's a cannon. I think that's where what it's going to come down to. And you know, the Saints' strength on defense is you know, their front line there. So I'm interested to see how much pressure they're going to be putting on Ben. I do think the run game, I mean, by the way, just like the macro picture of this, you know, with the Le'Veon Bell distraction starting the season and James Conner coming in, and I mean, they are so easy to root for because of what they've had to face. And even just looking at what have the Saints had to deal with this year? Nothing. They haven't really had major issues, right? Their punter the other day, like, you know, Morstead gets hurt for like a second. You know, like, what major problems and drama have the Saints dealt with? Nothing. And you look at the Steelers, and I feel like they've had to deal with a little bit more adversity, a little bit more distractions. And the fact that they're able to be playing at the level they have, You cannot count the Steelers team out ever. Yeah. Even if you want to, you're tempted, you can't. And I think this for sure is going to be the biggest challenge overall, offense and defense, special teams for the Saints team. I think the Steelers coming into the Superdome will for sure.
Well, yeah, that's so I was gonna say. That's the big thing here, that it's in the Superdome, right? Because I really think if it was in Pittsburgh, I probably would have picked the Steelers. You pointed out today the Saints could go all the way to the Super Bowl and never play outdoors again. So the last two games are in New Orleans, and then if they get the one seed, you know, they're playing indoors from there on out until they get to Atlanta. How important is that? You know, there's obviously the narrative, Drew Brees at home versus on the – it's not a narrative. It's backed by statistics. How important do you think it is for this team to play at home all the way, and how much do you think that would impact their, you know, chances to make it to the Super Bowl?
Tremendously. I think it's what's going to be the deciding factor, actually. These guys are so good in the Superdome. You can talk up fandom and energy. I fortunately get to go to a lot of different cities and cover teams. There is no city like New Orleans when the Saints are hot. And from something as basic as, you know, the cab drivers, you know, talking your ear off, to the energy inside the stadium, and the guys play up. They play better when they're in there. And, you know, we know Sean Payton and Drew Brees have never lost inside the Superdome when they're playing at home in the postseason. And I think they know this. I know they know this. And which is why I think they've sort of been caught off guard the last few games, because they know they're rolling and they're riding high and they're figuring out ways to win. But I do believe that they want to solidify this home field advantage, and they can do it with beating the Steelers this weekend.
Well, last question. Like, you've been in the locker room. We've seen these videos coming out. I texted you earlier that I want to learn the Teddy Bridgewater bike dance, because it's probably the only dance I can do. Like, what is it like? Like, what's the craziest thing you've seen in that locker room being there so much this season?
Okay, so last year I started to notice that the music in there was getting louder. So there's usually like an understanding that the media has to be in there so people kill the music. But in New Orleans, they don't care. They just blast what they want to blast. And then I noticed this year, it was even louder. And this guy was in the corner, and he looked like a DJ. So I didn't really recognize him for being a guy that worked on the staff. So I just asked him, I'm like, you know, who are you? And he said, I'm the hired DJ. He's like, Sean Payton hires me for every single game, and I travel with the team, and I get a text message basically, you know, with 2 minutes left in the game, whether or not they're winning.
Oh, my God.
And if they're winning, I set up a whole speaker system and we have a playlist. And so it's a club in there, and they're one of the most fun teams. And, you know, I just was with the Bears the other day when they
club
won the division, and they're awesome. Yeah, they're just as fun. But the Saints, they love each other, and they're probably one of the most fun teams because they have so much personality. And they love the limelight. They love talking to us. They love going on camera. Alvin Kamara, Mark Ingram, you know, the more confident they're getting, the more they win. I feel like the better things that they're saying. So, that locker room is really, really special. And especially the fact that Peyton gets it, that these guys love their music and they love that bonding and they get after it. These little things that are so dumb to, I think, normal people. Like, oh, who cares if they're like dancing to music and they have songs. But I do think that's the difference. In Chicago, Prince Amukamara told me that he thought that the season changed. Listen to this. The season changed for them on the Thanksgiving game after they did the Motown dance. He thought that was the reason why that their team bonded. I'm like, a dance?
That's amazing.
He's like, I know it sounds stupid, but it just connected us. We were so excited. We all were like texting each other and sending each other videos. And the fact that it went viral, he's like, it just made it fun. We're like, let's just keep winning.
Yeah, I love the idea, by the way, that the DJ, you know, he's got his winning playlist, but he can't, if they lose, obviously they don't want to DJ. Although I love, what if he had like a losing playlist, like a lot of Elliott Smith and super sad music that he'd have to put on in the same, that would be also amazing. I don't know if the players would love that. The song Choppa Style has now been in my head for 2 weeks ever since. I was walking around Bristol going, Choppa Style, Choppa Style. That song came out forever.
You're a nerd. I'm sure nobody cared about you doing that. They're probably like, yep, there goes Mina, just trying real hard to be cool again.
Talking to herself again. All right. Listen, just one question for you from Lenny. He wanted to ask you. We did questions with Matthew, but he specifically requested to ask a question for you before we finish. You ready?
Okay, what do you got?
This is
ready.
His question. I'm not accountable for it. So, and I do it in his voice. So,
okay.
It's really validating your thing about me not being cool, but. Diana, how are you so tan in the winter?
What is that voice? Sounds like a rat.
That's my dog. That's how he talks. Answer the question. Don't dodge it.
Some of us were blessed with olive skin because of our Italian ancestors, and there's nothing I can do but just have this color skin. It's just what I was born with. But what it does make me feel is almost sad. For those that are pale all year round. And, you know, it's so funny. Every time I feel like I see you on television, I just keep thinking I got to send Mina soup because she looks like she has influenza all the time. But I realize you're not even sick. You're just the color of snow.
Remember that we took a photo once of our arms next to each other? I think this was in the summer, actually. And it truly was night and day. But you know what? That's why we work together. The yin and the yang.
We are the yin and the yang, the oil and vinegar to each other. And I would like this summer for you to come to my beach house at the Jersey Shore. I feel like I need to expose you to fun and, you know, just a social setting where there's people talking to each other.
Like
and
a crop top? You're going to make me wear a crop top or something?
Oh, yeah, definitely. A little, you know, we'll take some photos too, a little belly show. Which, again, will probably scare people because they'll be like, Casper's here.
This belly has not seen the sun, Diana, in a long time.
I imagine what that belly looks like. But, yeah, I think it could be a good experience for you to just get you out in the world. You know, I'm going to assume you never went to prom, so I'm going to give you an experience of what, like, a post-prom party could be like.
I did go to prom with a friend.
You did?
With a friend.
what was her name?
Oh, Diana, you're lovely. Thank you so much for coming on, bud.
Thanks.